رحلة نجاح بودكاست is a podcast that discusses success stories of people in Egypt and all around the world. Every Tuesday at 10 a.m., I have a different guest with a different story. So join me on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anghami, and Podio. And you can also subscribe to and like our YouTube channel, Rehlat Nagah. And you can also follow us on all social media platforms. Welcome back to another episode of Rehlat Nagah podcast, or in English, for those people who don't understand it, Rehlat Nagah is an Arabic word or words that means journey of success. So today I have the honor to have a TEDx speaker, mental health advocate, Praveena. She's going to introduce herself, share her story, want to learn more about what she does in the world of mental health, because at the end of the day, the success of any person is also governed by mental health and how we are able to overcome resilient and be resilient in the face of challenges. How are you, Praveena? Sorry, it's a big elaborate intro, but I have to do that. So how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you? Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. So before I ask you the big question, tell me where are you calling from, or where are you located right now?
I'm from Malaysia, born and brought up here.
A lot of Egyptians would love you that you're in from Malaysia. I've been to Malaysia on my honeymoon, and I mean, it's an amazing country. And I had so much enjoyment there. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to go to the towers. That was the only bad thing. It was closed the day I went. But I went to the aquarium. I can't remember the name. You have an amazing aquarium. I'm really glad that you are with us today. Just some kind of information. The podcast is, I've been doing the podcast for a long time. I just rebranded it. This is the second episode of the new brand. And of course I'm gonna try and, you know, put it in terms of the success you're going to talk about. But before I explain why I did that, I want to hear from you, your story, struggles maybe, because we all struggle in kind of a shape or form. The challenges that you met to become such a amazing TEDx speaker and amazing mental health advocate. So please tell me a story.
Right, thank you. So talking about struggles,
yeah.
I believe everybody has their own share of struggles. What I'm about to share, I do hope that it might give some sort of an insight to people out there. Not that I'm a great navigator of life. I wouldn't call myself that. But certain anecdotes that I've learned throughout the way, and I'm pleased to share with the listeners out there.
Mm-hmm.
So my name is Praveena. I'm from Malaysia. I'm currently an academician in an institution here.
Okay.
And my journey, so-called my life story, why is it something that needs to be talked about? As we all know that one story is actually the biggest motivation. What is the best story that one can tell? It's our own personal story. Mine started at the age of 7 to 8 years old, somewhere around there. I'm not quite sure. Somewhere within that range, 7 to 8 years old, I was this little girl in a traditionally brought up family. I would call ourselves a little traditional, a little conservative. and a little culturally inclined as well, to a certain extent. So we are from the Asian continent. So we believe there are certain standards on how to bring up a child, whereby, there's a way to bring them up, and it's more on a authoritative parent parenthood style. When I was at this tender age, there was an incident that was life-changing at that time. There were two ladies who came in, horoscope readers. So I'm an Indian by my name. I think you can guess that, Praveena. I'm a Malaysian Indian, by the way. So horoscope and astrology and numerology is something that's ingrained in our so-called beliefs. And my mom was a said believer as well. So when these ladies came in, we cannot mistake the professionals with these people. And sometimes scams are everywhere. So we have this kind of people coming in claiming that they can read our future, so-called, in inverted commas, reading our future and stuff. And my mom is a fan of this kind of people. So she allowed them in. And this lady targeted me at that young age. She targeted me. She said, "Okay, show me your hand. Let me read your future." And she told my mom that this girl is an adopted child, and she's going to be the downfall of your family. She's going to bring a lot of bad luck. And I looked at my mom for some help. I was considered quite intelligent at that time. I would consider myself a well-read little girl. I used to be with a lot of books those days, yeah. And I understood the magnitude of her statement, and I looked at my mom, and my mom said, "We didn't know that you were such a sweet child, or else we wouldn't have taken you in." So that was what she said, and it was very hurting. I did not know how to react. But at that time, there was this burning desire that I do not want to be that the child who brings this bad luck. It somehow rather psychologically affected me that I started becoming defensive internally. So what I told myself is that I will not be that bad luck. I will want to prove myself. And saying that, I started to excel well in my studies, my academic line. I was the star student in school. Every time there was this competition, anything, I made sure that I entered this academic competition and showed myself out there. And it was all done in a very how do we say, rushed manner, competitive manner. It's not coming from the place of peace
Love.
or calm. Yeah, because there's always this fighting urge, like the fight of flight kind of a situation, that if I enter, I have to win. If I don't win, I will be the bad child. I will be the bearer of the bad luck. And fair enough, parents were happy with me. Mother was especially happy. And this continued for quite a number of years. And so let's fast forward the story. I am at the tender age, a marriageable age, they call it. I've already overstayed in our Asian terms. I was already 29 at the time, and I was doing my doctorate studies. So even before that, let's just rewind back and stop at the age of 11 or 12. One day, a realization came in that everything in my house was being bought by my dad. My dad is a sole breadwinner. That time, a realization, a thought struck me that after this, everything in this house, I will get it for them. I will get it for my family. The mentality has changed from me to be the best child ever to not wanting to be pinpointed for something that I'm useless of. So I don't like that term, being a useless child, being a hopeless child, which in fact I was being bombarded with. So a slight mistake that happens, I will be labeled as such by my mother and dad sometimes. So I avoided that. And it's quite a struggle in that sense, because at that time I did not understand. A small opportunity to find a mistake, I will be tainted as such. And I did not like that. So I will be on my edge, on my toes, you see, to avoid such a label. And I will strive and work hard and do things. In that process, I became very independent. I became a very independent child. I was not a difficult child per se. I was the one that's the most reliable one in the family. I'm adopted, by the way. The lady was right. The horoscope, the astrologer was right. I was adopted. So same goes to my brother. So both of us are adopted. So okay, so that thought came in when I was 11 years old. I decided that, I must be earning for this family. I must be the one buying stuff and, doing all this. So at the age of 29, I was in this marriageable age, and that phase was actually a horrible, horrible time frame for me. There were a few things that fell in that particular phase. One is my dad was too old to work, so his contract was not renewed. My brother was still studying. I was doing my doctorate studies, and there was a need for, to support the family and stuff. And I told them, no, I will do it. It's okay. I can do my doctorate and I can also earn. So I was in this mode of going and finding all sorts of part-time job opportunities while doing my doctorate studies and my research late up to midnight to come up with research papers and all that. And that phase was me working daytime and studying at night. And I was admitted to University of Malaya. I was this high impact scholar. So we were required to produce some high impact papers. So that was not an easy journey as well. However, during this phase, there was quite a number of things that I was doing. I was a real estate agent. I was an insurance agent. I was a medical surveyor. I was also a home tutor. So that finally stuck with me. I actually can teach in that explorative phase. I finally found that I can actually teach someone. Yeah. So in that time, it was quite a terrible phase. And also they were looking for an alliance for me, for a groom.
So let me ask you, I don't think you talk about culture and societal norms in Asia. Where I come from, I'm from the Middle East, from Egypt in particular, and of course, no, we don't consider ourselves Arabs or Africans. I mean, it's a very difficult description of who we are. We're not really Arabs, and we're not really Africans, especially those who are like me living in Cairo, which is a little bit up north, and maybe there are people who are fair skinned, and there are people who are dark skinned towards the south of Egypt. But we also have those cultural norms and things that we must do and we have to do, and sometimes I find it really unfair that if I'm in a family and I need to bring food for the family, for my father and mother, it is it's unfair, because at the end I am sacrificing my happiness or my career for them. Yes, I know this is required by me and by my religion, but sometimes feels that it's a big burden that I cannot hold on to. And I think we're very similar in terms of societal norms, because again, you talked about authoritarian
Parenting, yeah.
parenting. Yes, this is almost exactly like I mean, my father is like that, my mother is like that. I'm with my sons now, it's a totally different concept, because it's a totally different generation with a lot of internet information, and they understand their rights, they understand what to do. So you cannot act authoritarian with them, because they can they know the answers. So they're much smarter than when we grew up. But that doesn't mean that it's, I mean, less respect. So what I'm asking is, You did this out of love, or did you do this out of the need to prove that you are the perfect child?
Okay, a very good question. So you're right. Maybe culture-wise, we are quite similar in that sense. This authoritative parenting. When you ask me whether I did it out of love or to prove myself as a good child, I would say it's the second option, to prove myself. Simply because when you do something, yes, it is a necessity for us to, if the family needs help and we are in a position to do something, we have to do it. It's also part of the culture and things like that. And but the place where we come from, when we perform this task, when we do something for them, it must come from a place of peace and love and wanting to do it wholeheartedly. If you don't feel that way, that means there is something wrong. Even to say that authoritative parenting only is the cause here, it's not true. Because in my case, I've always been taunted. If I don't do it, I get labeled. So that is not a part of authoritative parenting. Authoritative parenting also comes out of love. Why they are authoritative is because they want to show the right path to the kid. Sometimes, yes, controlling and assertive is one thing, but taunting and humiliation does not fall in this category. So in my case, it's been taunted. You don't do this. Example, you get a call one day because you did not do something, and the label is we always know that you are a useless child. There's no way that we can actually trust you with anything. Upon doing all this, you still get labeled. Why? Because you have to, the need for the parent to keep the child under their control. The moment the child goes out of control, the child starts to think for themselves, it's a threat to the parent. That's why my mental health studies is focused on narcissistic parenting. So I love to, coach people who have experienced narcissistic abuse. This narcissism term came to me. I discovered this term at the age of 30 after my marriage when I started reading, because there's always this emptiness. Your question is actually spot on when you ask me why did I do all these things. Proving myself to my parents has been very exhausting.
Yeah, of course, because no matter where you're going to, how you prove it, you will always be still less than that. But let me ask you
Exactly.
this question, because I think a lot of people who are listening might not understand what's narcissism, but I may have some confusion. Say, for example, my oldest son, I tell him, you're irresponsible. I can't trust you. I'm still labeling him in a way that mentally and emotionally, he will not really trust me in a way. But sometimes I have to say that because there are certain acts they do and they're at their age that really shows that they're not ready to take responsibility, even though they claim they want to be responsible, but sometimes there are acts and you need to teach your children that way. And it's been very, it's a, been a very difficult path. And you said that the authoritarian way is always to give them the right path to take on. And I agree. My father always said, told me, I give you a piece of advice so that so you don't go through the same experience. And he always says that word in Arabic. And because I'm a very stubborn person by nature, and I really want to do something that is not according to his wishes, I take that path. I do it. And then I realize after like maybe 10 years or so, yeah, you were correct. I shouldn't have done that because, yes, they do want to help us. And I try and do that It's out of love, but at the end of the day, everyone has to go through their own journey and failures, because without that, if life was that simple, Pravina, it was that simple, no one would have been struggling. I don't think so. But what I'm asking is, you're trying to reach a certain point for your parents to be proud of you, or achieve you want a certain achievement. Sometimes we are personally, on a personal level, we are narcissistic to ourselves. That's my question. We're not narcissistic to ourselves. And I had a really interesting guest. She told me about an idea called the drama triangle. Have you heard about that? The
The drama?
drama triangle.
Dramatizing.
No, triangle.
Dramatizing, is it?
No, drama
Drama triangle. No, I've
triangle.
not heard about that.
Okay, so
Yeah.
there are three characters. There is the victim, the prosecutor, and the rescuer, and we all play those three different roles differently. And so I'm a victim, and then I persecute myself, so I become a narcissist towards myself, that I'm not good enough, that I'm bad, that I'm maybe overweight, that people don't love me. So I try and make myself better. And there's the rescuer who is trying to rescue that person, saying it's okay. I mean, it's okay. Just accept who you are, accept your feelings. So the question is to you. You talk about parents, but have you ever thought about narcissism in terms of the self of you?
Yes. Very good question. So in my study of narcissism is actually a spectrum. Everybody is a narcissist to a certain extent. Narcissistic behaviors is defined as being overly giving importance to yourself too much. It's a behavioral disorder where one gives themselves too much of an importance. And there are four types of narcissists: grandiose. We have a covert narcissist. We have a malignant narcissist. We have a passive narcissist. Quite a number of terms have come out this past few years. So, in terms of me, whether I was a narcissist or not, I was playing the victim in this whole scenario. For me, throwing a pity party for myself was something that I used to do very often those days. And if you ask me whether I had narcissistic traits throughout this journey, yes, I was probably the one playing the victim all the time, trying to, put myself in a very pitiful situation. But I did not display it to my parents. For me, the thing that I am telling myself that I have to be the great child, I have to be the greatest daughter in the world, kind of a thing, is for me to also play that role, to keep up with that standards. However, a true narcissist will not be able to identify that within themselves. A true narcissist truly believes that whatever that they say or do is true, is the truth, is the ultimate reality. It is very hard to knock sense to a narcissist. But at one point of a time, I realized that I was doing this thing. So that was the time I realized that I should not fall into the narcissistic trap, into the victim trap.
But
I should not find.
don't you think in sometimes when you push yourself towards achieving a better goal, towards achieving your dream, isn't that like self-motivation? Because it's really, for me, it's a bit confusing. I can be self-motivating, push myself, I can do better. I'm much smarter. I'm not, all that kind of self-talk, to push myself. But there's a really thin line between self-motivating and being a narcissist, right? I mean, you can easily go overboard. I'm just trying to understand, because I think we do it with good intentions, but we don't realize that we're doing it, and it's creating more harm to ourselves than
Sure.
possible. You
It's a
agree?
very good point. I believe that so in this case, there is actually a thin boundary between self-motivation and, trying to prove yourself. The idea is to go back to the root, to the fundamental. What
Mm.
are you trying to prove? For who are you trying to prove? There's something called extrinsic factor and intrinsic factor. If you're doing it for your own purpose, for your own satisfaction, for your own career growth, for your own personal development, that is self-motivation. But if you're doing it for extrinsic factors, to be better than the person next to you, to prove yourself to others, which was what I was doing, to prove to not be taunted, to be viewed as a persona, as an expert in the society. You are not doing it for your own self-satisfaction. Then that is definitely not self-motivated. You are motivated by an external factor, and this is not sustainable. At one point of a time, you keep on doing things and you don't get validated, you don't get that validation. That's when you fall into depression, and sometimes you just give up entirely. So that is the
I think the problem is clear in the corporate world. I don't know. Do you work with corporate personnel? I mean,
yes, I
you go
do.
into a corporate with a very toxic culture and toxic environment where there is competition between people, but not healthy competition. I believe in competition. Competing with one another it brings out the best, but in a healthy and respectable manner. But what you're saying is, I have to prove myself. So if I say I'm your manager and I demote you, or I promote someone else who's less of an expert, you will try and prove to me that you're better than him by, I don't know, working harder, working longer. This is the question I'm trying to, wrap my head around. So you can clarify if I'm correct in my analysis, but this is what I would I see a lot.
So I am also in the corporate, and yes, I've seen people who have experienced this. And my personal take on this is I do not attempt to prove myself to the boss because I know I'm good enough. So I'll just be good at my job. And if the promotion did not come to me and went to someone else because of some sort of a recommendation or something else, or they don't find me good enough for the position, first I will have to analyze why I did not get the promotion. If it was because that other person has more influence, then I will start executing my plan B, which I've also done it previously. So it is not a matter of proving myself to a boss who I feel is not a good evaluator. If I've shown all my evidence that this is what I've done, also we cannot be too overconfident. We must analyze whether we have done or we have proven or we have achieved our KPI. We have to have that evidence to see whether we have done it accordingly or not. And if not, then we will have to improve ourselves. But if we have done everything and still there is some sort of a competition there, I will definitely opt to move from that place because it's not giving me that inner peace. And I know I'm good. So to
But
answer your question,
the voice of narcissism wouldn't overshadow you and say, no, you haven't proven yourself enough, or no, you have to prove better that you're better than the boss. Maybe, I don't
no.
know. No.
The only person that I wanted to prove myself to is to my parents. And when that died off, everything else died off. The only person that I would like to satisfy myself right now, which I'm still doing, and I will continue to do so, is myself. If I am happy, if I am contented, the dependents around me, if they are happy, it's not a forced situation. I'm not in a forced state right now. When you have cultivated this inner sense of peace and calmness and abundance, you will only want to keep yourself happy. And when you radiate, people around you will be able to feel that energy. I do not give the impression for someone to take advantage of me or to put me down, or simply because I am confident with my ability and myself. When I speak precisely. I I think before I talk. I take reflective pauses. Those are, active communication skills. I have upgraded myself to that level so that I will not be taken lightly when I voice out my opinion. So what I have done is to build my self-confidence, and this is what we call as healthy narcissism. I'm not the victim anymore. I empower my own life.
Okay, so this is the first time I hear, because I always thought that narcissism is a negative attribute or a negative way. I never heard that there's healthy narcissism, so that's very interesting for me to hear from you. So what kind of advice or tips do you give for parents who are narcissists? Because definitely through your journey, you're trying to avoid the mistakes your parents fell in by treating you that way, and showing other parents that when you treat your child that way, no matter how old you are, or parents will be always parents, but show them that this eats up in your self-confidence, eats up in your self-image. So what are the tips do you is it easy to change their mindset, or does it take a lot of work?
Throughout my coaching career, I've never come across parents who are narcissists who want to get out of it. I've come across children, adult children of narcissistic parents who still trying to come out of the loop. So to future parents, I would not say, I would not just to make this situation clear. Parents who are narcissists, who have adult children, it is almost impossible to get them to reframe their thinking structure, and simply because they will not reach out for help. They because it's already ingrained in them, for quite some time that, what their ways are right and things like that. I have only come across adult children of narcissists, someone like me who have undergone this abuse. Think that there's something wrong in their life, but they do not know what is it. They usually approach me, and these are the people that I can actually sow these seeds on. If you are in this ripe age of being a parent, what you need to do to not become or to not let your child experience the trauma that you have gone through. So this is my And my advice to those who are approaching me in that sense is to let go, to be free. Narcissistic parents, the main thing is that they want to instill whatever that they have. They want their child to be like their mini self, control. So that's where this emotional manipulation, this blackmailing, this victim playing, this guilt tripping, all this comes into the picture because they want to be constantly in control. And being a parent is not necessarily the person in control. It's not something that is compulsory for you to control your child.
I also wanted to
So
ask
this is
you.
what I would advise those future parents
I wanted to ask you. So
who
should.
have undergone a narcissism.
Hold on, the internet is can hear
Yeah, it
me.
was lagging.
So I wanted to ask you a
Yes,
question.
I can.
So should we stop telling our children that you're not good enough, or look at your cousin, he's doing better than you? Is that a narcissistic attitude also? Because sometimes I do that. I do that, and I'm being very honest with you. I do that unintentionally, but sometimes I think I want to motivate and push them to be better than their cousins, their brothers. So is that do you think that's a narcissistic attitude?
The motivation behind it is important. How you put it across is important, especially for kids these days. Anything that we say can be assumed as an abuse.
Yes.
And it's a different manner on how we address kids these days. So the motivation behind it is important. Constant taunting and humiliation will not work with kids these days. I think they will just be more rebellious. So there are ways to work with them in that sense. You know, how would you like to see them grow instead of taunting them or humiliating them or comparing them with others? Try to work on their own self personal development. I think nowadays I've heard a parent saying that if they say your cousin is better than you, then the child will say, just go and adopt my cousin. You don't have to be my parent. You know, that kind of answer sometimes we
That's the answer. Exactly, that's the answer that they can give. Or they say, well, I'm not my cousin. So I mean, I agree, of course, we shouldn't compare. I mean, if we grown-ups and adults shouldn't compare others to ourselves, because everyone has a different, story. Everyone has a different challenge. We shouldn't ask our children and the kids these days to compare themselves to others. Everyone's unique. So this is the whole point. I'm just really, interested in the idea of not being a narcissistic, because sometimes we tend to unintentionally, and it's good that you came on the podcast. You opened a light bolt in me, so that I can understand more of how to approach my children.
Yeah. So the main thing is the need to control. That should not be there. At once or twice when you guide them and you see that their path is going somewhere else, as long as it's not a negative path, maybe they're more creative in their way of expressing things. Maybe we should just let go and be it. And yeah, correct.
So I always like to ask this question. What's one word or one sentence that best describes you as a person?
Resilient.
Okay, that's great. So we're two resilient people talking to each other. So that's
Nice.
amazing. And what's your dream? The personal, the professional? Or is it one dream, personal and professional? So what's your dream? What do you hope for?
That's a good question. Stopped dreaming quite some time ago. I'm very contented with my current life, current situation. I wish to be in this manner, to grow myself in whatever way possible, but to do it with a in a place of peace and contentment.
Okay, that's fair enough. I mean, it's just I'd like to see where you want to go after this, because every one of us has a dream, or is going after a certain idea. Some people are dreaming and they don't do anything. So that's
Yeah, correct.
a different perspective. Pravina, thank you for being with us today. I mean, I really enjoyed our talk. I learned a lot about narcissism, and I think I'm going to read more about it the coming few days, because I myself is I'm a you know a bookworm. I read a lot, so this is why it's interesting for me to understand more in terms of this behavior, and see how people react, and how I can, see how people talk here in Egypt, because I think we have a lot of parents who are like that, and that is because of the society norms, like I told you. I mean, this is centuries and centuries of your father knows best, your mother knows best. You don't say your opinion at all. Your opinion is not welcome, but no one's going to listen to you. Who are you to say what we do? So this has been there for centuries. I mean, I'm not saying years, no, centuries, because this is how it has been. It's only been lately, since the rise of the internet and social media and all the information that is available for young kids today and teenagers, that the role of being a narcissistic parent with an authoritarian background has, you know, somehow a bit le less. It's not too obvious. Yeah. That's my take. I mean, that's how I see it.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mo.
Thank you for being with us. I mean, I'm really glad we were able to do this interview. I know we've been at each other, running after each other because of the time difference between Egypt and Malaysia. But I really enjoyed I enjoyed our time, and I wish you all success and happiness, and of course love from myself to you to everyone in Malaysia. It's been such an honor to have you with us on the show.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Thank you so much, Mo.
Thank you. Thank you everyone for listening to in this week's Rehlat Nagah podcast. Inshallah, next week we'll have a new guest with a different story of success, or a journey of success, better than a story of success. So be with us and keep listening to our episodes.